Good evening. We're glad to see you tonight, especially if you're visiting with us. We're happy to have you with us. I'll go ahead and warn you, though, I am the fill-in guest speaker, so bear with me this evening. If you're a member here, I would like to remind you that somewhere in North Carolina, Barry and Danny Campbell are preaching, so I'd like you to remember it could be worse if you're looking for a long evening. When Jesus heard these things, he marveled at him and turned around and said to the crowd that had followed him, "I say to you, I have not found such great faith, not even in Israel." What a great proclamation to hear. This man, to hear from Jesus, the Son of God, that he has great faith. And that's what I'd like to talk to you about tonight. How do we develop that great faith where we can have Jesus say that to us? That I've not seen faith like this, what great faith we have. And that should be our goal. So what I'd like to do as we get started here, talking about developing great faith, is ask you a question. Is your faith as strong as it could be? Well, you might say, well, you know, our faith should always be growing, so it's never going to be as strong as it should be. And that's true. But I'd like to follow up with this question. Has your faith grown this week, this month, this year? And really that puts it in a different light. You know, are we doing the things that we need to do to grow more, to learn more, to be closer to God, to be overcome temptations and deal with the things in life? And so that's what I would like to talk to. There's many reasons that we might have for saying, well, you know, my faith's not what it should be. And really, these are, I started to say reasons why our faith hadn't grown, but really they're excuses for our lack of growth. Well, you know, I have been so busy, my job, my family have been taking up a lot of time. I just get to the end of the day and there's no time left. Or it's, you know, I am so busy that, you know, by the time I do what I need to do, I'm just too tired. I can't do it. Or another excuse is, you know, the world is just so evil. If you turn on the news at night, I mean, it's a great reminder and a depressing thing to watch. You know, I'm watching the news to try to catch usually the weather or the sports. And in between that, you're hearing about all the evil that's happening in the world, all the things that's going wrong. And now, you know, just in the past month, you can't even listen to sports without hearing about the evil that's going on. So it's been really tough. So that is definitely something we've got to deal with, and it really can depress us and cause us not to grow. Well, you know what? You know, I had things planned, and things just didn't really work out the way they were supposed to. And that could be, you know, we might have seen ourselves married and we're not married, or we may have seen ourselves, you know, getting a particular education or going into a particular line of work, and that didn't happen, and that can be difficult for us. Well, you know, I can't get beyond something that's happened to me, some mistake that I've made in the past. I just can't get beyond it. I can't forget it. It just pulls me down. I'm constantly worried about it. And also, along the same lines, those around me are dragging me down. Maybe your spouse is not what they should be and that is causing you problems, or maybe it's your parents, your children, you know, whatever relationships we have can also make it difficult for us. And then the final excuse that I'd like to mention is, you know, I'm going through life, I just don't see God in my life. I can't see Him working in my life, so it's hard to know that, you know, He's really there. So those are a few of the excuses. And what I'd like to talk to this evening, really the premise for the lesson is, I don't know if you know, you're watching TV or you've been to maybe a business conference, you may have seen motivational speakers. You know, they'll come up and usually there's smoke and lights and they come running up and they get you fired up about things. And it seems like some of those speakers You know, connect to people. You know, connect to different kinds of people. I'll give you an example. I was in a conference, and they had a speaker come before us, and he was somebody that was in corporate America. He had to deal with the, you know, the politics in a big company. And anyway, he just got tired of it, and he started drawing cartoons and really started to get into that. And so, anyway, he turned these cartoons in, and they were rejected, and he kept trying and couldn't go anywhere with it. But then, you know, he just happened to get a break, and somebody, you know, an editor that was reading this thought, you know, these cartoons don't make any sense. But her husband, who was in corporate America, read it and said, this is really funny. So he ended up getting published, and anyway, he was talking about, you know, seeing opportunities. It was the guy that writes the Dilbert cartoons. You've probably seen those. So you knew when you read those that the guys actually had to work in corporate America, because some of those cartoons are just so on. But, you know, that's something that I could relate to, because I'm kind of in that setting. So as I thought about that, you know, we look at, like, in Hebrews 11, these great men of faith. And often it's difficult for us to try to relate to them. We think there's some kind of superhuman, or, you know, they're robots, and we don't really think of them as being real people. And the premise for the lesson tonight is, if those, the people that I've selected here from, and really the, where we're pulling this from is Hebrews 11, but if these people were before us, they're trying to motivate us to have greater faith, what would they say to us? So that's a little complicated, but basically, if we had these people before us today, what would they tell us to get us going, to motivate us, to make us feel like, you know, they're like us and they've dealt with the same problems and the same issues that we have? So that's what we're going to talk about. My goal in the lesson tonight is to motivate you to look at these things and realize that, you know, like I said, these are real people that were dealing with issues that we deal with, and they were able to do great things. So I wanted to begin by first just quickly defining faith. You know, what is faith? And this is one of those words that's always good. You know, in your Bible class, teacher always asks you, what's the definition for this and this, this. But actually for faith, we've got a definition right there in the Bible that we can always turn to, Hebrews 11:1. And it says, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. A couple things in that. First, this idea of we're hoping, we're looking to something. And also this idea of it's not seen, but there's some evidence behind it. The NIV translates the verse, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. I think that's a good translation also. So what we're talking about is this idea of a strong conviction, a trust. And, in life, there's a lot of times that, you know, we have faith in things, and we're not necessarily talking about spiritual things. If you work at a job, you have faith that you're going to get paid your paycheck at, you know, whatever the end of the period is. There's different things that we show faith in. We have faith in history, you know, some of the history that we hear. So it's something that we deal with all the time, this idea of faith. But what we're talking about this evening is faith in God. You know, faith in Jesus as the Son of God is the faith we're discussing. And it's a faith that gives us victory. If you will, turn over to 1 John 5. If you look at verse 4, it says, for whatever is born of God overcomes the world. And this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith. Who is he who overcomes the world but he who believes that Jesus is the Son of God? So we see here that faith will bring us victory. And that's really what we see in this in Hebrews 11. You know, if you look through that chapter, all these great things that these people have done, the very first two words of that verse is by faith. By faith they were able to do these things. So that's what we're going to be looking at. And going back to what I mentioned earlier, if someone was before you right now saying, how would you emulate my faith? I had faith to lead a nation. You know, what would you think? And of course, there's many examples of this, but I want to talk about Moses. He was such a, he went through so many things. I think he's such a good example. Let's turn over to Exodus 2. And I will, we're going to read several passages in here, but I'll kind of set it up. Remember Joseph came to Egypt and brought his family, and the Israelites multiplied. And what had happened, the Egyptians had put them under bondage. And if you know anything about Egypt or watch the Discovery Channel, you've seen some of the things that the Egyptians built. You know, just some amazing structure. So it's probably not a good thing to be a day laborer for the Egyptians. They probably worked you pretty hard with those big stones and those big the pyramids and things that they built over there. So it was just a bad situation. But the people continued to multiply. And so Pharaoh got concerned, and what he decided to do was, you know, what we'll take the male children and we will kill them, throw them in the river. So that's kind of the background of where we are. So let's start reading in Exodus 2, verse 2. It says, "So the woman conceived and bore a son, and when she saw that he was a beautiful child, she hid him 3 months. But when she could no longer hide him, she took an ard of bulrushes for him, daubed it with asphalt and pitch, put the child in it, and laid it in the reeds by the river's bank. And his sister stood afar off to know what would be done to him. Then the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river, and her maidens walked along the riverside, and when she saw the ark among the reeds, she sent her maid to get it. And when she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby wept. So she had compassion on him and said, 'This is one of the Hebrews' children.' Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, 'Shall I go and call a nurse for you from the Hebrew women that she may nurse the child for you?' And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, 'Go.' So the maiden went and called the child's mother. Then Pharaoh's daughter said to her, 'Take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you your wages.' So the woman took the child and nursed him. And the child grew, and he brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. So she called his name Moses, saying, 'Because I drew him out of the water.'" So we can see God in this story so much, in the fact that, you know, not only was Moses saved, but he also had his mother to raise him and teach him things, and also had access to the Egyptians and the power of the Egyptians. So let's read on in verse 11 here and see what happens. You know, Moses, I'm sure Moses has been educated as an Egyptian. He knows, you know, the people well, but he's also heard about his people. His mother's, you know, taught him about the Israelites and the things that they've gone through in their relationship with God. So in verse 11 it says, "Now it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown that he went out to his brethren and looked at their burdens. And he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. So he looked this way and that way, and when he saw no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. And when he went out the second day, behold, two Hebrew men were fighting. And he said to one who did the wrong, 'Why are you striking your companion?' Then he said, 'Who made you a prince and judge over us? Do you intend to kill me as you killed the Egyptian?' So Moses feared and said, 'Surely this thing is known.' When Pharaoh heard of this matter, he sought to kill Moses, but Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian." So if Moses was here before us now, I think one of the points that he would tell us is that, you know, things don't always go as we plan. We heard that saying that life is what happens in between our plans. Here, as Moses looked at the situation, he was ready to do something. He was ready to help his people out. And what ends up happening? He's got the Pharaoh mad at him. The people are mocking him that he was trying to help. So it just had to be, you know, a very discouraging situation for him. Another thing that he might tell us is, you know, keep God in your plans. It almost seems like Moses is wanting to right the wrong without God. He didn't talk to God. He just went out and acted and didn't consult God in his plans or see what God wanted. So what happened to Moses? He goes off. I think he's around 40 here. He goes off and he becomes a shepherd. He goes from being one of the most powerful people in Egypt down to a shepherd. What a fall for him it would have been. And then to be rejected by his own people. But I think another thing that Moses might tell us is, you know, often we can't see the big picture. You know, God had a plan for Moses. He wanted Moses to learn about to be a leader. And what a better way to learn about being a leader than tending the flocks and learning. And we see that image throughout the New Testament where Jesus is the shepherd and leading us. But, you know, Moses would have learned patience. Just think how important that was going to be to him, to learn patience for the people. So we can see that, you know, even though Moses didn't understand it, you know, God had a plan, and he would see it later. The next thing I want to look at is this idea that God will provide. If you look down in Exodus 3:2, it says, "And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire and from the midst of a bush. So he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, but the bush was not consumed." So here's this burning bush that we know about, and God actually calls Moses. And if we look down on verse 7, it says, "And the Lord said, I've surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. So I've come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up from that land to a good and large land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites." So we see that God, you know, has a plan for his people, but how does Moses respond to this? Well, he first begins with, "Who am I?" If we look over in verse 11, he says, "But Moses said to God, 'Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh, that I should bring the children of Israel out of Egypt?'" I'm sure the memory of what had happened to him before, you know, he's reminded of. And how does God answer him? How does God provide? In verse 12, he says, "And I will certainly be with you, and this shall be a sign to you that I have sent you." So Moses kind of missed the idea. It wasn't about him. It was about God. God would provide. His second excuse was, "Well, what if the people don't believe me?" And God provided for him there too. If you turn over to chapter 4, verse 1, it says, "Then Moses answered and said, 'But suppose they will not believe me or listen to my voice. Suppose they say, the Lord has not appeared to you.' So the Lord said to him, 'What is in your hand, a rod?'" And he basically goes through these signs that would show the people that God was with him and was guiding him. So what about his next excuse? "I'm slow." This is in verse 10. It says, "Moses said to the Lord, 'O my Lord, I am not eloquent, neither before nor since you have spoken to your servant. But I am slow of speech and slow of tongue.'" So we can see here that Moses is even questioning, you know, whether he can do it. And how does God answer him in verse 11? He said, "Who's made man's mouth? Or who makes the mute, the deaf, or the seeing, or the blind? Have not I, the Lord?" So God's created all this. This is not something that that is a valid, you know, worry for Moses. But God goes ahead and gives him Aaron and lets to speak for him. So God provides for him there. And as we follow the story, I won't read much more than that, but as we follow the story, you know, Moses goes before Pharaoh. He gives his sign, and really what ends up happening is he makes Pharaoh angry. So Pharaoh turns around and makes the burden on the people more, so he's got the people mad at him also. So if we turn over to 522, we read that Moses returned to the Lord and said, "Lord, why have you brought trouble on this people? Why is it you have sent me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to the people. Neither have you delivered your people at all." And then God answers him again in the next verse. "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh. For with a strong hand he will let them go, and with a strong hand he will drive them out of his land.' And God spoke to Moses and said to him, 'I am the Lord.'" And we see that as Moses is there with Pharaoh and we start going through these 10 plagues, that Moses finally relents and lets them go. And really...